Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Popcorn and Prosecco, an episode that's like kind of live. I don't know, we're all in the same room together.
It's a very special episode.
We are very excited about this, and we really have popcorn and Prosecco tonight. Should we cover this late? Now the little robot's gonna go off.
Don't do it!
Don't!
Oh god,
don't!
Oh no.
Please.
Kitty, get away from the gap.
Do it!
Can you see your feet? Just curious. I can't tell.
I don't think so.
Not really.
There.
How does my sweatshirt look?
Your sweatshirt looks good!
Come on, little robot.
She has to put it down or she's going to eat it the whole time.
Popcorn's so good.
Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Popcorn and Prosecco, an episode where we're actually all in the same room together, drinking Prosecco and eating some popcorn with a cat. You don't see the cat, but you will see the cat. So tonight we're going to talk about Blended, X-Men Days of Future Past, and also the new Ant-Man news, and probably not in that order. Actually, I don't even know what we're starting with, but I think we should start with Blended. How do you feel about that?
We could start with Blended.
Should I start with Blended?
Yeah.
I guess I should start with Blended. And Blended makes me really sad, because Blended is an Adam Sandler movie, and he is ruining his career and making terrible, terrible movies that are not funny and are kind of insulting too. This one is about, I don't even remember their names, to be honest. His character and Drew Barrymore's character, she's Lauren, I don't remember what he is.
Mac?
But they're both single parents with children, and they concoct this plan to get a free trip to Africa, and they hate each other. They went on a first date, and it didn't work at all.
A blind date.
They don't like each other at all. He took her to Hooters, it was all wrong. And then later on, it's like, oh shit, we're all in Africa together, and we gotta get along together. And the theme in this Africa party place is blended families, and I guess it's
they call it a family moon, and like it's apparently
a
supposed to be
moon.
That's what they keep calling it. Apparently it's supposed to be a trip where the express purpose is to bring like the two halves of the bunch blended family together.
So they're both blended families now, I guess. They think that they're families, and they all go on this trip, and they have to interact, and, you know, of course, they end up liking each other.
She has two sons,
issues.
He has three daughters, and neither of them knows what to do with them.
But they learn. They learn through each other, and then everybody lives happily ever after. Well,
yeah. Sports. I feel like I sound like a super cynical bitch about this movie, but, like, this movie is
terrible. You were mad.
I was mad, okay, because that's a cat off screen. I just want to say, this movie is evidence that we really care about you, the viewers.
Yeah.
Because none of us were reviewing this for other outlets.
Nope.
None of us had any reason to watch it, but we talked ourselves into it because we were like, the people want to talk about
it. It was
this
a
movie.
Long conversation where Angie and I spoke to each other for about an hour about whether or not we were going to make ourselves see this movie, and then we're like, Perry.
So I'm just saying, you owe us one now.
Yeah, so it does sound like we were dreading it, and we were, but then right before we went to see it, I had heard some moderately good things from some peers of ours, so I was like, maybe it won't be that bad. And it's not a totally unfunny movie. I laughed, I think, three times, maybe
I would
four.
Love to know who those peers are, but I don't want to call them out on the show. We need to talk about that later, though, because I judge them now.
I kind of feel like that's actually the problem, is that it was more disappointing to me because there are flashes where you can tell, like, what a better movie this could have been,
yeah.
Where you could tell that,
wait,
like,
what flashes are you talking about? This was, like,
okay,
to me, this was a bad idea through and through. I didn't think anything was funny or smart. I didn't think the story was logical whatsoever.
No,
the story
it's doesn't not. Make any good I sense. Think that the main thing for me was that, like, Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler, this is their third movie together. They did The Wedding Singer after 51st Dates. They still have incredibly good chemistry, and when the characters are allowed to, like, stop
but
being,
they
like, weird over-the-top characters and actually interact, I feel like they go really well together.
I don't think they have romantic chemistry, though. Like, they're funny together.
They just have, like, a really warm, kind of cozy, like, I want to hang out with
sure,
these people chemistry.
Sure, but, like, I don't want to see them kiss, ever.
Well, part of it is because when it comes time to kiss, he kind of goes, like,
it's so weird.
It's so awkward.
It's not good.
And then there's like, other, like,
okay,
also,
so
one of the other families they encounter on this trip is, like, Kevin Nealon.
And he's, like, the best part of the movie.
Yeah, it is something. Oh,
I don't remember her
actress's
name. But it's,
she
like,
was
this,
so funny. She's so funny. She's the. I laughed everything
yeah.
she did.
She's like a blonde trophy wife type that always
she's
wears like low cut shirts and like has
her.
Like a, you know, high pitched voice.
And she
like
keeps going,
like,
romance! And every
yes.
time it's all about watching her boob shake. But like, it was funny every time.
It was funny because those two were just like.
I think Dewey's eating a cookie. You guys can keep talking now.
Oh no. So, I don't know
hope we're cutting this out, but Perry's cat loves chocolate chip cookies, which
we mistakenly brought.
Yes. And now that he knows we're tied up, he's taking full advantage.
Yeah.
I hid the cookie in a cabinet.
Okay.
So back to London. The thing with London is, it's a cute concept where the idea is supposed to be, he's a widower who has three daughters that he doesn't know how to raise as girls because he's such a dude. He works at a sporting goods store. So
his sporting goods store.
Yeah, so
his Zach, because there's a lot of product placement.
So his daughters only wear clothing bought at Dick's Sporting Goods Store, which apparently doesn't have a women's department, so they all dress like they're caddies.
And they have the most absurd haircut that I've ever seen in my life that is attributed to a barber, but yeah. I don't know a single barber in this world that would do that haircut
also,
and be like, that's good work.
A barber is one thing. It looks like those girls haven't washed their hair ever. It's just a bad haircut. But then the running joke is supposed to be that the 15-year-old girl played by Bella Thorne looks like a boy, but she doesn't. She looks like a supermodel with a shitty haircut. It's like, it's a joke that never really plays, and then, like, I was especially annoyed with her character because she's set up to be this, the change is supposed to be that she meets Lauren, and Lauren encourages her to embrace her feminine side and wear skirts and get hair extensions at an African resort because that's what you do. And, like, it's just this whole thing. But, like, she does it all to get the attention of this boy, this is Dewey, who, like, it's unclear if he was interested in her before the makeover. I think he was.
That would have been the more interesting thing. If he was interested in her before
with
she changed,
the terrible
then
hair
she changed.
I feel like the movie hints that he's, like, already kind of intrigued by her.
Yeah.
So there's really no need for this.
But he sees her playing basketball, and she does this incredibly obnoxious thing where she tries to act girly while playing basketball, which means, one, she's terrible at basketball, and two, she struts around, like, I mean, like, I guess...
Like, I think Adam Sandler's character is like, are you voguing right now?
Because
that's what she's doing.
And it's like... And then he asks her in public if there's something wrong with her bra. It's just unfathomable. It doesn't make any sense. It's like, I understand that his wife has died, but, like, Angie and I kept saying, like, have you ever been alone around a woman? Ever?
The gender dynamics in this movie only make sense if it's 1952 and you're a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, any more than that and you would understand that this is not...
And that's exactly my problem with the movie is it feels like this movie could have been made 20, 30, 40 years ago and they didn't need to change any of the script notes. I mean, like, there's nothing about this that feels like a modern movie. It just feels like a tired concept with these tired gender tropes.
I'm surprised that there's no, like, modern technology, actually.
No.
Now that you bring that up.
Well, to be fair, they probably would have crazy roaming charges in Africa, so it's not like they're going to use their cell phones.
That's a good point. There's the
one
logical
that
thing
sense.
That Glenda did was not
and you're welcome, Adam Sandler.
Another crime that we need to address, this movie has Terry Crews, it has him sing, it has him do the peck dance, and yet it really is a waste of Terry Crews.
Well, first of all, this is a movie that's set in Africa where all the actual Africans are just people that are there to serve the Americans, the vast majority of Norway people. Yeah, the only Africans you see are, like, you know, incompetent staffers and, like, poor people in the slums. Terry Crews is one of them. The first time he shows up, he's, like, it's a very, like, over-the-top comedic role and it's funny. And like, his whole thing is that, like, he has, like, a Greek chorus kind of trailing him, and
yes.
They just kind of follow the characters around and, like, kind of, like, you know, sing, narrate, plot
We
plot
are
points.
Blending!
Yeah, exactly.
That's
And it's like, kind of funny the first time, and then it's kind of a little less funny the second time, and then it repeats itself 8 times. And this is, like, this is something that they keep doing in this movie, where they keep having a joke, and, like, even if it's, with the exception of that woman that shakes her boobs,
that was the only joke that worked every time
the whole
me.
Time.
They did do that one quite a few times, though.
Yeah, they did.
They did. And it's hard to explain why that was so funny. I think it's just because so much of this movie is cynical and mean. Like, those two people are mean to each other. It's not just that they don't get along. They are mean to each other. They say hateful things to each other on a date.
It's like, would you ever behave like that on a first date that went wrong?
No,
no. And I mean, in
ever,
a movie,
even if you were
so
thinking
hostile.
That.
And it's like,
it's not like he was doing anything outwardly mean to her, either.
No, though, I mean, it's creepy and gross that he was like, let's go to Hooters, and then he ordered French onion soup.
You would
there's
think
a lot
that,
of,
like
red flags.
Someone would have gone to Hooters and explained it just a little bit.
I mean, they set it up as like, oh, neither of these people have been on a date in a while, but I'm like, have you guys been in civilization recently?
Or on a date
ever. The way they act to each other, like you said, is so hostile and so mean, and like if somebody talked to you that way, you would be like, fuck this person, I've never seen them again.
Yeah, but we're supposed to root for them to get together. Oh, also the hints that they're supposed to get together are so banal. Like, yeah. They get coffee, and they both like coffee with one sugar.
And no milk. Don't forget the milk part.
That is extraordinary.
They drive the same really generic white suburban minivan.
Well, apparently every person who has a family drives a minivan.
Yeah, because then later on another character shows up and she also has that van. So
because she adopted her own kids.
Right.
Well, kind of adopted.
It's such a bad movie. It's such a bad movie. It makes me sad because, like, I was one of those kids, like, I was obsessed with Adam Sandler. I've seen Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore more times than I've had Hot Meals, and I owned all the tapes, and I listened to them repeatedly. I even had, for road trips, we made a audio tape copy of Billy Madison to listen to on the road so we could quote it the whole road trip. Like, that is the level that I used to be about, like, adoring Adam Sandler, and, like, I feel like I grew up and his comedy has not changed at all, but like at least Billy Madison stuff had kind of sweet lessons.
It did. No, it did. It changed completely. I think right around Billy Madison, it like did this incredible like commercial flop. That was the big thing about him at the beginning, is that
yeah.
It was this crude humor that was kind of like unheard of. Like when Billy Madison came out, I don't think we'd ever seen someone behave like that on screen. I mean, my parents even tell me, they took me to see that when I was a kid, so I was like, God, what, like 9 or 10? And my mom always tells me when we were sitting there, like, me and your father, we looked at each other and we're like, what did we just take our kid? And like,
if peeing that, your pants is cool, I'm Miles Davis.
Seriously. But like, that became kind of mainstream for a little while, and then all of a sudden he stopped doing what he was good at to make money.
I think that he's actually, like, there was an interview he did recently on, like, a talk show where he, like, admitted that, like, oh, yeah, like, you know, these movies I do because it's a paid vacation. And, like, look, on the one hand, I don't blame you.
There
if somebody
was
like,
on that today.
Yeah,
yeah,
if someone was like, I will give you millions of dollars to go on a paid vacation with your friends and family, like, great, I'll take it. But that shouldn't preclude, like, him actually putting
yeah.
any effort in his movie. And he doesn't.
Whatever you want, Adam, can you just make a good movie? That's all we want. Go wherever you want to go. Because we still have to go see your movies. We would really appreciate it if you put a little more effort in.
I mean, on the bright side, he does have a couple movies coming out that are not what you think of as Adam Sandler movies, but
so
that he's
nervous.
In, so...
Yeah,
we'll
Jason
see.
Ryan
maybe it'll be like Punch Drunk Love again, where we were all like briefly like, oh, is Adam Sandler gonna branch out?
And hey, then, I like Spanglish. That's a real performance.
Spanglish?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not just saying.
He can
say
do actual performances. That's what's so insulting, is when he doesn't seem like he's trying.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess he didn't seem like he was
and,
trying.
Like, the
I was actually, when I was writing something about it today, and I was flipping through pictures, like behind-the-scenes photos, because I needed an image to go with my article. And while I was doing it, there were like behind-the-scenes stills of like Drew Barrymore like hugging the kids, and like, and there were none of Adam Sandler. I mean, obviously, like, who am I to judge
sure.
what he was really doing? But like, based on those pictures, it's like they look like they're having
you
fun. I don't know where you were.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just disappointing, and it's, you know, it's just, I mean, even the character doesn't feel like he's trying, because, like, when he finally decides to make an effort, they're like, did you shower and comb your hair?
Yeah, and this isn't the same scene where Drew Barrymore comes down with, like, a blowout and, like, with a fabulous expensive dress,
yeah.
and she's all made up and, like, dressed
that
to the nines.
She puts a lot of effort into
and
herself.
Everyone is,
and
like, high-fiving
showered.
Adam Sandler because he looks like he showered and combed his hair.
You can't tell if that guy combed his hair. His hair is like that.
No,
exactly.
That was also strange.
It's not like he looked dashing. It wasn't even, you can't even call it a makeover. It was like he put on a dinner jacket.
I was just gonna say, he put a jacket on, and that was it.
To be fair, have you seen him on the red carpet? Like, that is about as dressed up as Adam Sandler ever gets. But anyway, I think...
Yeah, we should move on to the next topic. We should probably do Ant-Man next.
Yeah.
And save X-Men for last.
From bummer to bummer. So, yeah, you know...
You want some more of this?
Yes. By the time you watch this, you probably will have already heard... Edgar Wright, who was set to direct the next Marvel movie, Ant-Man, has suddenly dropped out. And this is after he's been working on this movie for the better part of a decade. We're having some problems over here. Technical difficulties. Please stand by.
And now I can't stop laughing at it.
Was
like,
why are you shaking it?
I was laughing and trying to hold it in.
So back to Ant-Man. So news broke today that Edgar Wright has decided that he's left Ant-Man, and this news comes after he's been working on the project for like 8 years. I think he's been attached since like 2006, like literally. And also right before we're supposed to shoot, it's supposed to start shooting like now, basically, because it comes out next summer. So it was very surprising and very disappointing.
Was he really attached for that long?
Yeah, he's been attached to this movie since, to put it in perspective, this is since before Iron Man came out. Like, he's been attached to this movie for longer than there's been a Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Wow. Jordan, who runs the film stage, noted that, like, he graduated, I think he said from high school, college, and got married in the span that he has been attached to this movie.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Now I care even more that he dropped out.
Yeah, and the they cite creative differences. Obviously, we don't know what those differences are, but I think that kind of based on what we know about him, and what we know about Marvel, like, I think most people are kind of assuming that what happened was that the movie was getting too Edgar Wrighty. And, I mean, you know, to some extent, I understand why Marvel has to keep their things consistent, but the Marvel Universe doesn't really have that much room for someone like Edgar Wright to, like, really make his own mark on it.
I'd be surprised that James Gunn got through the process and was Marvel enough for them and Edgar Wright didn't do it.
A lot of people have pointed that out, and that's true, but, yeah. I mean, we haven't seen the movie yet, we don't know, like,
I'm sure.
You know, we don't know. I don't know. I think it's really disappointing. I was really looking forward to Ant-Man because I really love Edgar Wright, and, you know, otherwise, like, I don't think I would be that interested in a movie called Ant-Man. So it's a really big bummer.
I don't know much about the character, so I don't know what will really make an Ant-Man movie special compared to all the other superhero movies we have, but, like, the idea of Edgar Wright being attached is what made it different.
Exactly.
So it's hard to imagine anyone else coming on board at this point that'll make me as excited or interested at all than he did.
Yeah, what I know about Ant-Man is largely confined to the cartoon shows and, like, animated movies I've seen that involve him, the ones I've seen, he's usually a jerk, and so I was kind of curious how this was gonna work out. But, like, Edgar Wright leaving, I don't know, man, it's like, I'm not surprised. I know he's been on this project for forever, but it's like, he's not the guy you think of when you think of huge commercial successes, and I feel like Marvel knows what works for their audience. They know that really well. And so I feel like if there was gonna be a conflict where they were thinking, you're gonna hurt our accessibility, then it makes sense that they split ways. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm saying that, like, I'm not particularly surprised the guy who made Scott Pilgrim, which fanboys and fangirls freak out about, but didn't make money, so you guys didn't, not enough of you went to see it. Like, it's not, you know, it's not shocking that there was this confrontation. It's shocking that it happened so close to production.
It's still surprising to me, though, because it's not like anyone ever had, you know, a bad attitude about him directing it. I think the fact that he is directing this movie, regardless of how Scott Pilgrim made, has always made people more excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I was definitely caught off guard when I saw this tonight.
I don't know. I mean, I'm disappointed, but on the other hand, like, I feel like I've always kind of felt like, well, it's Edgar Wright directing a Marvel movie, which is great. On the other hand, is it going to be an Edgar Wright movie or a Marvel movie? And now I feel like this kind of answers my question. I mean, although to be fair, like, they're trying to lock in another director right now. They haven't said who it is, but apparently they have their sights on someone, and we don't know who it is, so I can't
Joe
say this
Cornish.
Is... There's a lot of speculation that it's going to be Joe Cornish, a tech block director, because he co-wrote the script.
There's going to be talk of Joe Cornish directing, like, every major movie until he finally gets one.
Also, I feel like it would make sense if he walked away if, like, he had had a conversation with Cornish about being like, I'm not going to do this, but you can take this on or something. Like, that would make sense to me. Otherwise, I can't imagine walking away from a project like this.
Yeah. I mean, it's all speculation at this point, but...
Sure.
I am thinking a little bit about, like, who do I want to direct this next, and actually who I'd like to see direct it next is a TV director who I think could use the exposure a little bit more of directing, like, a big commercial picture,
mm-hmm.
and who is probably more used to having to you know, modify their style to suit a bunch of different shows.
You know who I'd like to see who's been doing TV? I'd like to see Rian Johnson step in. Like, I like Brick and Looper, and I think he does a hell of a job, and I don't know how much he knows about Ant-Man, but you have to assume at this point, it's basically, they're probably looking for a hired gun, and to his credit, he's been a hired gun on several TV shows, and, you know, I think he's got, like, good nerd cred, and I think he makes really fun and interesting movies, so I think that'd be a cool choice.
I feel torn about that, because, on the one hand, like, Rian Johnson's something, I don't see anything he directs, on the other hand... I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a Marvel movie no matter who directs it. And I like Marvel movies. I'm not saying I don't like
them. No, I know
what
you mean. It seems like this decision would also knock Rian Johnson out, too.
I mean,
like,
he is kind of
in a similar position as Edgar Wright.
If, as we're assuming, the problem is that, you know, Edgar Wright's style is too distinctive and too quirky, then Rian Johnson is also not going to be a good choice. Or, I mean, you know, maybe he could modify his style to fit the Marvel house style,
but he has
really
been doing TV stuff. Like, we have seen
him
jump into... I remember he did Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna impromptu other things, but I know he was doing a bunch of, he like did a bunch of shows that people were like, oh, like Terriers, because I remember Devendra talking nonstop when he did
right.
Yeah. But I mean, like, he, I think he would be able to plug and play that way.
I don't know. So, overall, I don't know. There's not that much we can say about it because we don't know the real reasons why they left, and we don't know who's going to replace him, and we don't know how this affects anything quite yet.
Now Guardians of the Galaxy is back at the top of my list.
Yeah.
I was just writing about a trailer with that, and, like kind of the sentence that I wrote was, it's a good thing that that trailer came out, like, post Amazing Spider-Man and Captain America, and I guess now X-Men also, because I'm like sick of it. It's the same stuff over and over. And it's not bad stuff. It's almost never bad stuff. But if I'm gonna get more superhero movies, they need to have a fresh spin on it. And that's like, that's one that it looks like it has it.
Yeah.
And then I was hoping that Edgar Wright and Ant-Man were gonna have it too.
I feel exactly the same way.
And it's like, I even feel that way about Star Wars a little. Like, it's great that Gareth Edwards is gonna direct this, one of the spin-offs, but like between him and J.J. Abrams, that's just gonna be like more Star Trek shit. It's just gonna be more of the same.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's getting to the point where I'm just like, does it fucking matter anymore who directs these things? Like, they all.
Yes, I think it's gonna matter
okay,
with
I
Jurassic
mean,
World.
No, I'm exaggerating,
yeah,
but like, sometimes
I
get a little bit fatigued.
Feel
like,
out.
Like,
I think it mattered with Godzilla.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm just being like overly melodramatic.
Yeah.
But like, I do feel like when a studio is spending $200 million on a single project, it does really limit like what they're allowed to do and play with a little
hopefully
bit, and because
of
that, so many.
Change that.
Hopefully, but because of that, I feel like Godzilla was really good, but I feel like a lot of them kind of look the same, feel the same, kind of the storylines go the same way.
That they do.
So
speaking of which,
we
should move
let's,
on.
Speaking
to
of comic
Days of Future Past,
comic book fatigue. Days of Future Past. So
good luck explaining this one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you got the hard job.
No,
how did this happen? Angie normally takes the hard stuff. Okay, so X-Men Days of Future Past is the movie that is supposed to culminate all of the different X-Men threads that have been set up so far. You have X-Men from the first three movies and X-Men from X-Men from X-Men First Class united in this story about the future. When in the future is unclear.
2023.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I missed that. Okay.
I was writing down the numbers that they were saying and just,
that's
like,
helpful.
Edited
okay,
it out.
I couldn't figure that out. Okay, I missed that part. Anyway, so...
Well, it's because 2023 looks like 2000, like,
yeah.
God knows what. It looks way, way into the future.
So it's in the future. The thing is that the a huge civil war has broken out between mutants and humans, and these things called Sentinels are giant robots that track down the mutants and destroy them. So... The remaining X-Men get together and they use Kitty powered magic, not
Kitty
magic.
Pride. Kitty power.
Yep, sorry. Kitty Pride. Kitty Pride power.
I think you got her mixed up with the singer-songwriter
Cat
power.
It was my own fan fiction. And so she sends Wolverine back to 1973 so that he can reunite the X-Men who had separated after First Class, which are, you know, Magneto, Michael Fassbender, and James McAvoy's Professor X, get them to team up and prevent the action that will cause the creation of the Sentinels, which is, I think I can say this because I think they really reveal in a trailer, which is Mystique assassinates Bolivar Trask, so they need to stop that. It is actually, like, that's the main purpose of the plot, and that part is very simple. So to dress it up, they add a bunch of other stuff, and that is where the movie, for me, gets less successful.
They add about 80 mutants.
There's a lot
of
mutants.
Which don't really do anything.
So there are parts of this movie I think work exceptionally well. Even though he has the lamest introduction in a franchise ever through a freaking Carl's Jr. commercial, Quicksilver is awesome.
Yeah, I think so many people were worried because, like, you know, he, in stills, he looked weird, and then the first time we saw him was that commercial, but he is one of the
Evan
highlights
Peters nails
of this movie.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's introduced in 1973 as this cocky kid who has a superpower that, like,
that makes him seem like he's always high on cocaine. It makes him seem
like
he's always in the third act of Goodfellas.
It's funny because Beast says, is he a teleporter? And they're like, no, he's just really fast. And it's actually really fun to watch him be really fast. And then there's a sequence where we slow down to Quicksilver time. And it's just, it's funny and it's magical. And it involves
and
the song Time in a Bottle by Jim Croce, which
You would think that shit would have gotten old, like, because he basically just moves too fast and talks too fast all the time, and it's the same shit over and over, but at the same time, it's not. Like, he could have done that throughout the entire movie, and I still would have loved
it. It's also because it plays so nicely against everybody else in the movie who is so intense all
and
the
miserable.
Time.
Yes, yeah, because the fate of the world
smiles in this movie. Nobody.
Especially in the future. Mm. There are no smiles in the future. You know? The Sentinels have wiped out smiling and laughter and joy and also the sunshine.
That's true. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I was disappointed in this movie because, to be fair, they promised a lot. They gave us 23 different covers with all the mutants that were going to be in this movie. They gave us teases about this and that. They cast Peter Dinklage. They gave us all this cool stuff. Omar Sy. Like, there's all these amazing people in this movie. And you're like, Jennifer Lawrence, James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender. There's all this great stuff. But the thing is, it's just too much damn stuff for one movie. So a lot of it gets very little screen time. And I became increasingly frustrated by what I expected to get based on the marketing and what I actually got.
I had no problem with the amount of screen time everybody got. The problem to me was that the story that connected them all was just freaking retarded. This story made no sense at all. Like, nothing that happened in it. Like, alright, start off with the beginning. You have this absolutely killer action sequence where a couple of the old X-Men from the first trilogy and a bunch of the new characters that we were all really excited about, they unite and they fight the Sentinels in this outrageous battle scene.
It's really amazing.
It's so good. And then all of a sudden, like, the movie just sucks the life out of that moment by putting them with another group of X-Men, and then they literally have a powwow sitting down trying to explain. It made no sense.
I had no clue what they were doing. They spent five minutes explaining what you just saw. Which, one, is insulting, and two, is boring.
It was just weird because on the one hand, when the movie opened, I was like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
So, like, I kind of needed it, but I was also like, but this is the most boring way to present this information.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's how they presented a lot of information.
Yeah, a lot of it
too.
Is literally people just sitting down and explaining stuff to you while everyone looks intense.
Well, it's because it's the same thing with the Sentinels. I mean, I think that was probably Peter Dinklage's best work, because that's the first time we saw him, like, fighting for something, even though it was verbally. Like, my biggest problem with him is that he wanted all this shit and did nothing about it. It was just like, I need Mystique. Like, you need to take my Sentinels. You need to, like,
also
same
his motivation
shit over, and
for creating the Sentinels to me was really confusing.
I think in general, so I liked, like, there were some moments in this movie that were really great. Like, that Quicksilver thing was great, and to me, the draw of the X-Men has always been, like, the characters and, like, the really complicated character dynamics. And the parts where they do that was great. The parts where the movie lost me was the part where it started to feel like just another comic book movie.
Wait, what parts did you see that?
Okay, so my favorite
My absolute
favorite scene in this movie is, there's one where, so, you know, Professor X and Magneto haven't seen each other for a while. They're not actually all that thrilled to see each other, to be reunited.
They're literally only getting together to save the world. They still are super angry about lots of things.
And there's a scene where they're, like, on a plane and like, the two kind of just, like, sit down and they basically hash it out. And you kind of, like, understand, and, like, it's a really good scene that conveys, like, all
so
the...
That's so good in that scene.
Yeah, it conveys, like, all the love and the hate that's between them, and you really, like, understand. Like,
I just want a Magneto spinoff of him doing espionage. Because
you still want that spinoff of that scene from X-Men First Class where he's in that white shirt and
Magneto,
Nazi
Hunter.
Yeah.
And then in this one, I won't give it away because it's a fun thing, but they tease another thing that Magneto does, and you're like, I was like, well, I want to watch that movie. Like, quit teasing the stuff and show me something cool.
That moment worked really well while it was playing, but then the shift Magneto does, right smack in the middle of the movie, ruined all of that, because
that builds
up to absolutely nothing because of what he decides later on.
Exactly, and that's kind of the problem is, like, as the movie goes along, I felt more and more that characters are doing what the script needs them to do and what the plot needs them to do, but not what makes sense for them. They don't feel motivated. It just feels like,
and what the box office needs them to do. Why the fuck did he have to lift a stadium and plop it down?
Do you know why
he had to do that? Because you saw that happen, and cars flew into it. That is why.
Well, that's also why we had to have both sets of X-Men in this movie.
No, because, like, if the story was better, that still could have worked.
Well, that's the thing that's so frustrating is, like, They set it up like it's going to be these two simultaneous stories, but, like, I was very confused by, do days pass in the present?
I was so confused. Okay, so basically, while Wolverine is in the past, the reason he's in the past is because Kitty Pryde is hovering over him with his hands, like,
phasing him through the time-space continuum. Yes, like this. And it's never clear whether time is passing at the same pace in both timelines, or if this is like an Inception thing, where like, in one level it's a lot faster than the other.
Because otherwise you think at the same time, because they haven't told us otherwise. Right. So that means that Kitty Pryde is legit sitting for days.
There were scenes where they're like, we're going to jet off to France. And I'm like, you mean Kitty Pryde is just going to sit there for their like 8-hour flight, like going like this?
It's and apparently what made that part even worse is that when certain things happen to Wolverine, he like twitches in the future and lashes out and his claws come out. I didn't like that either. That could have been a great ticking clock to me.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that it was like so loosely handled. It's like, what's going to make his claws pop out? A physical fight or emotional trauma? Yeah. If it was just when he saw Stryker, which might have been the worst performance in that entire film.
Yeah, it's very
if it's just when he saw him, I would get that. That would mean something to me. But the fact that it happens, you know, when he gets in a fight, it's like, I know why you're doing this.
I feel like I had a little bit more. I feel like I enjoyed this movie more than you guys did, but at the same time, like, I have a lot of the same. I don't know. I guess the stuff that you didn't like bothered me less, but I kind of agree with you on most of the stuff you're saying. Like,
I don't want to say I didn't enjoy it, though. It's not like I ever looked at my watch or was bored or anything like that.
Sure.
It's just when I got out of it, it's like, wow, that was stupid, that was stupid, that was stupid,
That's the thing. I got out of it, I was like, well, that was okay. But the more I've sat with it, the more I get frustrated about the things that didn't make sense, and the more I get frustrated about the movie I feel like I was promised. Which maybe isn't fair, but, like, Bryan Singer shared so much stuff on Twitter and on Instagram and on all this, and then they did this huge campaign where they kept promoting all these new characters.
That big show they did at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Everyone there.
And so, I feel like you created my expectations, and then, like, honestly, most of the new characters, aside from Quicksilver, they have less than 5 lines, if a line at all. I'm pretty sure some of them don't speak.
I don't think any of them. But
Warpath is like, look out,
or run, something like that.
Technically, he does have a line.
Yeah,
I just want to see a movie with Quicksilver and Blank. Like, let's just have the two of them play.
Their
fight
scene was so neat.
They're great.
It's just like, you know, we get so little time with him. It was really frustrating. And like, Omar Sy is such a great actor, and he's so interesting. He looks like his Bishop.
I don't know, like, what Bishop does. Like, I don't know any of his sources, so I didn't get what he was doing at all in the movie.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
I don't understand
scene,
what his power is.
That's why the first scene is so confusing, but then they don't explain that. So.
But I got other people's powers, except for the fact that
it took
I thought Sunspot was Pyro.
I did too.
Because, like, I just knew Pyro because he made fire, so I'm like, oh, that's who it is. Then I looked it up and it's another one.
It took me so long to figure out what Blink was doing, because I was like, I know she's opening and closing portals, but, like, where do they go? And I think it was, like, 2/3 of the way through, where I was like, oh.
See, I think the second Thor prepped me for that.
Well, here's
portals in movies. Do more portals in movies. Those are awesome.
Well, here's the thing. I think that, like, the difference between, because you might be hearing us and thinking, like, but it's cool that they're included at all. But this isn't, like, in the first X-Men trilogy where you'd see Jubilee run through the background, or in the first one where you see, like, Shadow Cat, like, run through a door, and it's just, like, a fun little, like, Easter egg to fans, like, get it? Like, they actively teased the inclusion of these characters. But then, they're barely in the movie.
I mean, I get your complaint about that, but if you put aside the marketing, I feel like it's, I don't know. I think what bothered me more was that the characters that we already know and that we're already supposed to care about, like I said, for me, the whole appeal to X-Men has always been, like, here are these characters with this, like, wonderfully rich dynamic that I care so much about, and it kind of seems like they do a little bit of that, and then they're like, oh, but we're like, you know, this is an action movie, it's an expensive action movie, guys, let's move it along, these, like, big action set pieces.
What I wrote in my review is that this movie is basically watching the X-Men go on a mission. You're not with them at all. You don't care about what they're doing, you don't
that's
feel
a very
engaged
good way
with
it.
That's just what this is, and that's why you don't feel anything the entire time.
No, like, I mean, I used to be obsessed with X-Men 1 and 2, and I really was, like, so excited for this movie, and I wanted to, like, feel something when I saw this movie, because that was what was always, like, so, like, that was why I got so into the X-Men when I was younger, because, like, you really feel for the characters, you care about them, you understand them, and, like, you know, and this movie, like, I was, like you said, like, I just kind of felt like I was watching them. I didn't feel like I was, like, oh, I'm, like, in the X-Men jet with them, and I'm gonna, you know, like, things are happening, and I feel like I'm there, like, just kind of felt like watching a bunch of things happen to a bunch of strangers.
I just thought of another question, but I realized it would have been a spoiler.
Oh, let's
move on
to spoilers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's move on to spoilers.
So
spoiler
if you
time.
Don't want to be spoiled,
turn it
see
off.
You next week.
Go away. Goodbye. All right, spoiler time.
Wow, Perry.
That's what the Prosecco does to you. Okay, so spoilers. So what I was just going to bring up is why the hell did they sacrifice the jet? They just destroy it. They rip it to pieces and like suck its energy out.
Yeah.
I just didn't get it.
But then I guess that
but it didn't because it didn't stop the Sentinels. I mean, is that like what Bishop does? That like power his gun or something?
Yeah, I think it's like he's like rogue but transferred into a weapon. And if I got that wrong, I'm sorry. I'm basing it on what I saw in the movie because I genuinely am having a hard time remembering.
That makes no sense at all, though. Because, like, how would he found out, like they do when they're little kids, like, I'm a mutant. Like,
but maybe it's like a conduit thing. I don't know.
In the movie, his main job is to run places with Ellen Page.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They kind of, like, link arms and, like, run through, like, the things together. Yeah. And that's, like, his main thing that he does in the movie.
Yeah.
Someone on Twitter was like, if they can send Hugh Jackman back in time, why don't they send him somewhere like a few years earlier and just make
this stuff have never happened at all?
Sure,
instead of 4 days before. That's a very, very big plot hole. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, that never even registered to me until
it didn't either.
But that absolutely renders this entire film like pointless.
Well, to be fair, most time travel movies have that problem.
Wow.
It's not rendering a whole movie.
That's very true.
They do render almost every other, arguably every other X-Men movie pointless because, again, huge spoilers. In the end, when Wolverine gets back to the present, it's a different present because they have effectively saved the day. So he wakes up in the school of witchcraft and wizardry. Don't argue with me. And he's walking around and he's literally saying stuff because the movie treats us like we're idiots, like, Storm. Who you saw die 5 minutes ago.
Oh my god, that's the most melodramatic death I've ever seen in my life.
We know who she is. Whatever. And then, by this point, if you don't predict what's gonna happen, I don't even know. He walks down the stairs.
You're too stupid to live.
Well, it's just like they telegraph it so intently what's gonna happen. And he sees Jean. And he's like, Jean. And he walks over to her and she's like, hey, Logan, what's going on?
And he's like,
and in a really good comedic beat, a hand comes out. And it's Cyclops, and he's like, hey there, buddy. And that was actually a really solid comedic beat, but then I felt bad for James Marsden, because I was like, aw, you're so good, but that character's so dull. But anyway.
Well, what about Anna Paquin, who gets a title card, and she's in it for
She doesn't have one. Yeah, speaking of people who were promoted in the marketing campaign, but have nothing to do with this movie, she got her own Empire cover, literally. Literally all she does is, like, a two-second
cameo. She's, like, the fourth solo title card in the credits. Like, I know you're cutting her out of the movie. You change that. It's as simple as, like, moving it.
It's actually really funny. But anyway, so basically the third movie definitely didn't happen because Rogue is still there. And as you all remember, Rogue gave up her mutant abilities in the third movie. Also, Beast is a professor at the school, which is interesting.
It invalidates everything that happened. Like, the entire first trilogy.
It's not a great thing.
I couldn't figure out if it would have invalidated one or two based
Everything is gone.
Because he travels back in time to before one and two happened.
The only thing that doesn't ruin is first class.
Yeah. So when Wolverine travels back in time, it's after first class.
So none of those mutants can come
also
back.
The Wolverine is negated because if Jean is alive, that would have been a totally different story.
So it's like this whole thing where all the character development that he's been through for the past, because Wolverine is the franchise's star.
He still remembers it all. So theoretically,
it's like Back to the Future when Marty comes back and he's the only one that remembers that it didn't used to be like.
Yeah. I wonder if that'll be addressed in the next one. Whether
probably
Wolverine
not.
Will be like,
probably
so
not
because
don't
they don't give a shit that. About addressing what the other things that don't make sense. For instance, if you're wondering why is Patrick Stewart's Professor X have his body back, they're not going to get into that. Just forget that happened. And you can argue that now that the third movie didn't exist, but it should have happened before. Time travel paradox, guys. I've been watching a lot of Doctor Who. It's not okay. I'm really mad that this movie was basically like, oh, did you like those other movies? We'll forget that because we're doing this now. Like, it's not like a reboot. It is a movie that negates everything that happened before.
Yeah, after I saw the movie, like, I was talking to one of our other colleagues about this, and it was just like, this is a superhero movie in which not only does nobody die, but people who were dead come back.
Yeah.
It's like, there are more... No one important dies. None of the characters that actually have, like, names and, like, are played by actors you recognize.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're right. Literally none of them.
Wow.
I guess the only ones they really kill are the ones in first class.
Yeah, you see tons of people die, but then none of that happens.
And they die more than once.
Which is actually, the second set of dying deaths in the future, I actually thought was just way too far. It's a PG-13 movie. I don't know how the MPAA. Oh my god!
Because the second round, when it's like they're holding his face into the fire, what the fuck?
Yeah. It's not okay, guys. Like I was upset.
And they like skewer someone, don't they?
Three times. Yeah. Poor Blink gets impaled by three different sentinels at the same time.
Yes.
It's just, it's like aggressively violent, and then you're like PG-13.
But it's okay because
there's
you know, Wolverine went back and he fixed it, and now everyone's alive and everyone lives happily ever after. That was another annoying thing. Like I
was felt like, you know what that is? It basically is. It's like when at the end of a movie you're like, it was all a dream. And you're like, well, screw you. I just had feelings
for
2 hours.
Yeah. You know what's even worse about that is that the second the movie started, that point was made. Someone said,
yeah.
You know, it's all gonna go away. And like going into the whole story, knowing that no one's gonna remember but him, it's like, eh.
Also, especially because you know they're gonna win because they're the damn X-Men. It kind of hurts the impact of the whole shebang.
And I mean, I'm not saying that I always want characters to die, but the fact that, like, nobody is really even injured, and
it
that anyone
really
who is, because it, like, goes back and, like, unkills everyone, like, it just kind of feels like, retroactively, I'm like, when you think about it, there's, like, no stakes here.
We've been talking about this for quite a while.
Yeah, sorry. I don't mean to make it sound like I didn't, like it. I don't know. Like, I enjoyed it more than not. It's fun. But it just didn't feel as special as I wanted the new X-Men movie to feel.
The more I think about it, the more I feel insulted by it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I liked what you did before, and now I feel like I'm supposed to forget those happened.
I ended up giving it a B- because I found it entertaining, but like I didn't like it. So like, you know how you can go on Rotten,
yeah.
and you
mm-hmm.
can give it like Rotten or Fresh, regardless of what your score is?
Yeah.
So like I put it at like a 2.5 out of 5 and like still made it rotten. Because like,
no,
it's a
you.
Bad movie, but I was entertained.
What's crazy about it is you have to have seen all the other movies for this one to make sense, but then at the end of it, it basically says, now forget everything you knew before.
That's a good point. Like, not only does it invalidate those, but you have to have already seen them.
Yeah, otherwise, I don't think people would be able to follow this movie. They do some flashbacks, but, like, I actually had to, like, actively think and be like, wait, what happened there? And, like, I had to really, like, dig deep and remember stuff.
I think you have to watch First Class for this to make sense. I think if you didn't watch the original trilogy,
yeah, I think X-Men 3 you needed to watch.
No, I don't think so.
Mm. You're all that excited for Apocalypse?
Meh.
We'll
see.
Not so much.
We'll see.
Know. What if they said today that Quicksilver's gonna have a bigger role because fans really
Thank
like
God.
It. Yeah. I'm on board for that. Let's give more Quicksilver because, like, you need more X-Men in the main central whatever that are like fun, because like in the first three movies, Magneto was like a bad guy, but he was a fun bad guy. And like Michael Fassbender, I adore him, but he's not a fun bad guy.
He's very grim.
Yeah.
Yes. All of them are very grim.
Exactly.
You know what I'm more excited for? I'm more excited for the spin-offs because I feel like part of the problem with this one is that there's so many characters that you can't really do any of the characters justice. Hi, Dewey. You want to talk about X-Men with us?
He didn't want to not have
I think he
his
thinks
cameo.
It's time for us to wrap up. Anyway,
so I think that I'm actually kind of, I think that more than X-Men Apocalypse, which to me, I kind of like, it's going to be like this. Like, I'm more excited to see what they do with the spinoffs, where, like, the individual characters will have a little bit more time.
I really
to, like,
liked the Wolverine.
Like, breathe and, like, have their,
like
yeah, unless they make another movie that invalidates everything that happened in those spinoffs. So, you know. We'll
which
see.
Is very possible.
Yeah. Thanks for your money. Screw you. I know.
Anyway, so
on that note, thank you guys so much for watching. If you want to keep following along, we are all over the place. We're on Twitter, Popcorn Prosecco, popcornprosecco.com. Follow us on YouTube, Popcorn Prosecco, and then also follow us all individually because we love to tweet at you and have you follow all of our reviews, interviews, and whatnot. Do you guys want to shoot out some links?
Yeah, look for me on Twitter at Christy Puchko, KRISTYPUCHKO.
And you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and you can find my writing at slashfilm.com.
Catch my writing at littlemisscritical.com, and me on Twitter, P. Nemiroff. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you next time.
Cheers!
Cheers!
Oh.
They are bending. They are bonding.